Hello and welcome back to the podcast. Today we're going to be looking at the opposite of what we've always been looking at, that beauty gives you certain advantages in social life, such as dating, work experiences, opportunities in terms of interpersonal connections, and so being attractive is obviously a clear benefit. We can quantify just how much of a benefit it is by terming what's known as the halo effect, or the opposite of being unattractive, termed the devil effect. So basically, if you're unfamiliar with these terms, you're joining us for the first time, the halo effect is you get certain positive traits attributed to yourself just by virtue of being attractive. The devil effect, same thing, unattractive, you get negative attributes attributed to yourself. For instance, less attractive people are deemed to be less intelligent by their teachers, by their workplace employers, less attractive people are deemed to be more incompetent, and the list goes on and on. So there are clear benefits to being attractive in social interpersonal experiences, and there are clear disadvantages to being unattractive just because of how human psychology works. I'm not going to delve any more into the benefits of being attractive because that's what the last 12 or 13 episodes of this podcast have been about, but instead, I'm going to talk about the disadvantages of being physically attractive. Now, that may sound like a crazy idea. How can there be disadvantages to something that we otherwise associate with good genetic health? After all, being physically attractive means that to a degree you have very strong genetic health and features that represent your ability to pass on and create healthy offspring. I'm going to read you out a little story, and this is a segment taken from When Physical Attractiveness Does Not Benefit, Focusing on Interpersonal Relationships, Target Employee Personality and Career Success by Xi'an Meng from the University of North Carolina. A former banker in New York, Deborah Lee Lorenzano, 33, claimed that she was fired for being too attractive and filed a lawsuit against Citibank. The reason behind the lawsuit was because she was ordered not to wear a list of clothing, turtlenecks, pencil skirts, fitted suits or heels, so on and so forth, in the workplace because it was distracting to other employees trying to do their jobs. However, Lorenzana explicitly compared herself to her female co-workers and complained to Human Resources in a letter that followed. They were able to wear such items of clothing because they were short, overweight, and they didn't draw as much attention, but since I was 5'6", 125 pounds with their figure, it wasn't quote-unquote appropriate. About a month or so later, she received a message from her male boss that she was being put on final notice for reasons including lagging sales and being late on days the bank wasn't even open. She petitioned through a couple of letters to ask for a transfer, but the position Citibank gave her in a different office was as a telemarketer with the title of quote-unquote business banker. So in other words, she's getting shafted by the company. A few months later, at the Rockefeller Center branch, her female manager sat her down and fired her. The female manager cited the problems related to her clothing at the previous branch and said that she was sorry, but Lorenzana wasn't fit for the culture of Citibank. Lorenzana's lawsuit case shows the opposite outcome, in other words, of career success, from physical attractiveness. Physical attractiveness is the most obvious personal characteristic, which is defined by social consensus, and a substantial amount of research evidence has shown that attractive people have benefits in many aspects, such as earning more salary, having occupational success and occupational competence, and attractive people are perceived as being more intellectually competent, as having greater occupational potential, and as being more successful in persuading others than they are compared to their less attractive people. But as we saw in Lorenzana's case, this is one of those unique circumstances where the opposite effect of being too attractive kind of makes you out to be a target in a workplace and has similar effects for both men and women. The men want to date her, the women want to be her, and so overall it creates a very hostile work environment simply because, by virtue of just being attractive, being desirable. However, from personal experience and from everything I've seen so far, I will accept that this problem is more catered towards women. In other words, it affects women more so, disproportionately more so than it affects men, and that's just because attractive women get unwanted or untimely advances from a lot more men than attractive men get from women. So in this specific example of Deborah Lee Lorenzana's case, it's not just so much of human psychology, but rather a deeper culture of how men treat women in the workplace. And then from that, we can also talk about the commodification of sexuality and how oftentimes we see a young woman's sexuality as one of the most valuable commodities on the planet. Think about it. Beauty care, skincare, it's all about trying to make women look younger, is it not? actors like Leonardo DiCaprio, who are very high value men, don't get this twisted, date women 25 and below. As soon as they hit 25, he just cuts them off, which is so bizarre to me. Because whenever I see older men dating like 18-year-old girls, I have to question, what the hell do they have in common? Like, what does a 40-year-old have in common with an 18-year-old? It's like Grimes and Elon Musk. What the hell do they have in common? I guess, I don't know, I really don't know, but if you speak to 18-year-old girls, you'd know that their goals and where they are at life is very different to what a 40-year-old or a 50-year-old man is at in his life. So always that dynamic of why men want younger women, it's, I do understand it, but I can't relate to it is what I'm saying. So tangent aside, we're going back to the idea that women's sexuality is a commodity. It's seen as a commodity. I'm not saying it is, but it is perceived as one. And for that reason, this physical attractiveness tax is actually disproportionately affecting women rather than men. Now, I'm sure there are a lot of men, I actually do know a lot of men in the modeling industry, some of my colleagues that get some unwanted advances from women, oftentimes at work. And if you turn them down, they become hostile. Just like with men, men also do that. When an attractive lady turns a man down, he too may become hostile. So there is something to be said for both sexes, but obviously I would say that this issue of being too physically attractive is something that affects women more so than men. On that line of thought, there are some more examples. For instance, one study showed how more disheveled looking politicians actually got more votes than those who were very clean cut and dapper. Why? Because participants answered that the flawed-looking politicians were actually more relatable and seemed more human-like than the quote-unquote beauties, and 71% said unattractive types were more likely to help out a stranger. Moreover, 82% of participants considered very unattractive people to be a far safer bet to loan money to than the beautiful people, which is funny because it says a lot about how we think. I don't know how many of you have seen the TikTok trend where girls would often show off their boyfriend and, It's them doing like really nerdy things, and the caption is like, I know my boyfriend's not going to cheat on me because, and then they show him like playing with Legos or doing something really quote unquote nerdy. And the subtext of that is that they think that their boyfriend's not going to cheat on them because look at my boyfriend, he's such a complete loser that I'm the best he's going to ever have. You know, I'm not the only person who thinks that. There were a lot of videos that called that out, but there is a lot of subtext to why we're more willing to trust unattractive people than we are willing to trust attractive people, like in that previous study on 82% of people being willing to loan money to less attractive people. What is the subtext for that? Think about it. Kunkel 2009 actually tried to answer that and said, this is because individuals feel safe with less attractive people for the reason that they are more accessible and they have less likelihood to make others feel inferior. Is that not very messed up? Am I the only one who thinks that line of thinking is very messed up? The subtext for why we're more trusting of less attractive people is because we know in a sense that they have less opportunities. We're acknowledging the devil effect at play here, that because they're unattractive, they're going to have less opportunities for temptation or, you know, to squander your money. They're going to be more responsible. Whereas somebody who's attractive is hit up by opportunity left, right, and center. And so the likelihood of squandering money that you've loaned to them or whatnot is far greater. There's just opportunities coming their way all the time. Temptation is knocking at their door. Whereas with unattractive people, there is no temptation because there's no one knocking at their door. In a sense, this line of reasoning by Kunkel 2009 and the TikTok example I gave previously are very backhanded compliments, way of saying that these people are loyal simply because they have no one else to be disloyal to. In a sense, this kind of weakens the argument that being too physically attractive can even be a disadvantage, where the corollary argument, the disadvantage, is that if you're unattractive, then people are going to think that you're more trustworthy with their finances or that you'll make for a better politician, not because of your merit, but rather just because they think you're unattractive, and by that reasoning, you must not have a whole lot of opportunities or temptations coming your way to go off the rails. Let's go back to the lawsuit case. So Lorenzana was fired for being pretty as she had claimed, but there are some interesting arguments based on the interviews with her. From additional observations, it is possible to see physical appearance as not the main problem that she had for being fired, but is related to a deeper level personality attribute such as narcissism. Bates 2010, essentially, and I'm just paraphrasing here, said that She's a working woman of ordinary means, so she's making $70,000 a year, who feels that she has a right and the bank balance to dress like a movie star. So in a sense, Bates 2010 is victim blaming, and let's find out why. Narcissists are addicted to self-esteem and are hyper-motivated to self-enhance. It could be that under Bates' classification of Lorenzana, that she is genuinely a narcissist and we don't know all the details of her case. It could be that she really was being deliberately disruptive for the sake of getting more eyes on her, and that's a common trait that narcissists do have, so you also have to consider the devil's advocate. The role of physical appearance is not negligible in staffing-related decisions, and a significant amount of research evidence has shown that attractive people have benefits in many aspects, example salaries, performance evaluation, the likelihood of getting a promotion, so on and so forth. Physical appearance can easily be assumed that it is really not related to the work itself, but research evidence shows a person with high physical attractiveness can get preferable evaluations from others. Based on the literature review, facial attractiveness, height, weight are all highly related to a career success. Even though the target employee enjoys some benefit from the physical attractiveness stereotype, if that employee does not have a favorable personality, physical attractiveness may be negated and give detrimental effect to the target employee. This is what Bates is suggesting with the Lorenzana case, where if she is a narcissist and people just don't like her, she's a generally unlikable person, whether that's because of her personality traits, whether that's because she's very physically attractive and people are intimidated by her, or men want to date her, women want to be her, or something like that, then regardless of what the reason is, if her personality is undesirable, it's unlikable, then the attractiveness of her physical beauty will only be rubbing salt in the wound, and it will make your coworkers dislike you all the more. If you're considerably more attractive than everyone else, then in a sense, you are an outsider. And if an outsider fails to assimilate within a group, then sooner or later, people are going to develop an us versus them rhetoric where you become enemy number one. Therefore, the crux of this entire paper is basically saying that physical attractiveness can be a negative if you have an undesirable or an unlikable personality to go with it. Maybe you've heard this because I hear this all the time, but when somebody sees a very attractive person, especially like a model, and maybe you're at a bar or something and you see a very attractive lady, then automatically your first assumption may be that she's bitchy, or that she's rude or arrogant or narcissistic. And these are very preconceived notions that people hold about more attractive people because it's a form of self-soothement in case you get rejected. If you do get rejected, then you can be like, see, I told you so. She's X, Y, and Z. She's narcissistic. She's stuck up. Same goes for men as well. But I would, again, like I said, lesser degree for men than for women, just because of how heteronormative courtship works. Men approach women more often than women approach men. So when discussing personality, we need to consider two positive factors like likability and trustworthiness. And then there are some other negative factors like narcissism. Narcissism is a maladaptive trait, and when it comes to personality traits, it's defined by an unusually high degree of self-love, broadly reflecting strong self-admiration and behavioral tendencies that may not be viewed positively by others. Essentially, compared to unattractive people, those who are attractive have a higher score on measure of self-confidence and interpersonal orientation, internal locus of control and self-acceptance, and the resistance to peer pressure. However, when it comes to interpersonal relationships, narcissism is thought of as a problematic and maladaptive trait, and because narcissists are insensitive to others' concerns and social constraints, and they view others as inferior, their self-regulatory efforts often fail to earn the positive feedback that they are seeking, and rather undermine the positive self-image that they are trying to create. What this means in simple terms are narcissists do things in a very transparent way. They may try to make others like them, but in doing so, they're making themselves appear more unlikable because their actions are often seen as insincere. If you're a highly narcissistic person, it's very hard to hide the fact that you think that your coworkers and colleagues are inferior to you. The contempt that you have for them somewhat shows, and people can pick up on that. And so no matter what you do, your actions are seen as insincere because your actual thoughts are very different to your actions. Narcissists are often disliked as long-term acquaintances when they are engaged in interpersonal relationships. Paul House 1998 showed the progression of negative traits perceived in individuals with narcissism in interpersonal relationships, and narcissists were rated negatively as less agreeable, less well-adjusted, less warm, and more arrogant by their peers. Perhaps you're seeing a trend here, because like I said in that previous example, oftentimes when men see a very pretty woman, they have these preconceived notions that she is going to be arrogant and bitchy and all of those actual traits that we associate with narcissists because of her beauty. Like I said, same thing can go with guys. I've just seen it more often with women, men, you know, saying those things about women rather than the other way around, but I'm sure the same thing happens as well. But you're seeing the trend that these associations are being made simply because of your physical attractiveness, and in a sense they're repulsed by you even though they're physically attracted to you. Mack and colleagues study 2010 found that narcissists lose their popularity as time progresses. At zero acquaintance, narcissists are more popular at first sight because they produce more valued physical, nonverbal, and verbal cues in a limited information situation. However, in a long-term relationship, the negative social habits of self-enhancers, so arrogance and hostility and stepping over everyone around you, are more easily observable and lead to more negative evaluations by others. What does this have to do with physical beauty? Well, maybe attractive people don't only get benefits from the halo effect, but also get a little bit of the devil effect too, and maybe vice versa for less attractive people, like how they're seen as more trustworthy, even though less attractive people have documented evidence showing that they're treated unfairly in work settings, in judgments, in like a court setting, in terms of prison punishments, so many things. And so for that reason, maybe it's not all black and white. Attractive people don't get 100% of the halo effect, and unattractive people don't get 100% of the devil effect. Now, let's consider the opposite. We're going to be looking at another paper called Employee Voice and Perceived Attractiveness: Are Less Attractive Employees Ignored in the Workplace? And the reason why we're looking at this paper is because I don't entirely buy the logic that being too physically attractive is a large detriment to yourself. So rather, if I had to ask you the question, would you be physically attractive or physically unattractive? Which one would most people choose? Most people would choose physically attractive, and the reason for that is, as we're going to find out in this paper, in a work setting, being physically unattractive has more negatives than being physically attractive has positives. The paper we're going to be looking at is by Andrew Timming and colleagues, and all of which was done right here in Australia. Before we can talk about the effect of attractiveness on employee voice in the workplace, we need to actually define what the employee voice actually is. So a couple of studies, but in this particular paper, they've defined it as consisting of four categories: degree, level, scope, and form, where degree refers to how much voice an employee has. So for example, information and consultation to co-determination and control, which just basically means if I were to say something, how much influence does it have in reaching the right people? Level refers to the organizational location of the voice within teams, units, departments. Again, very similar to the degree idea, where let's use a real life example. Amazon workers being forced to pee in cups because they have such strict time and productivity requirements in the warehouses. Well, if that worker in the warehouse brought that concern up, what is the likelihood that it's going to reach Jeff Bezos, or probably not Jeff Bezos, but someone in upper management that can actually enact some real policy changes? That's what the researchers mean by the location of the voice. The scope refers to the various types of decisions over which employees are involved, from trivial to strategic matters. For instance, you're not going to ask a junior level associate on their opinions on how a law firm should be run, right? You're going to go to the senior partners or the CEO, if there is one, then that's what scope refers to. And lastly, form refers to how the voice or the message or the concerns or whatever you have to say about your workplace is delivered. So sometimes it's done through workplace councils, like in politics, you have a voice and it's given to your local municipality minister, and then it goes to parliament, so on and so forth. So there's many different ways of you voicing your concerns, but oftentimes directly being able to voice your concern is a lot more effective than having it go through 10 different people before it reaches the right person. In workplace scenarios, there is a whole body of literature that has already supported the evidence that looks-based discrimination is very much a real thing. For instance, you may have heard that very popular adage that for every inch that you're shorter by, you lose $2,000, or more correctly, for every inch that you gain, $2,000 in annualized income. Now, that doesn't mean that somebody's going to come out of nowhere like a leprechaun and he's going to give you a pot of gold that's $2,000 at the end of every year, but it does imply that if you're shorter, you will be more likely to be passed up for opportunities, for workplace settings, for leadership roles, and so these things do culminate into actual looks-based discrimination. So really, the question I'm trying to answer here is, given the choice, would I want to be more attractive or less attractive? And I think most people would say more attractive because we all recognize that the benefits of being attractive go far beyond the workplace negatives, you know, as we gave in Lauren Zahner's case. And so it makes a lot more sense to be attractive. So the answer is very straightforward, but we're still going to look at the disadvantages of being unattractive. Let me tell you about the study that actually took place. So they basically got people of Asian, Caucasian, and Black racial groups. In their data set, they rated the most attractive to the least attractive men and women, and basically gave those images to people who are currently serving as managers in some kind of work field or professional setting. And the results are not surprising at all. I'll read from the discussion. It was found that the managers, both male and female, across all employee races, exhibited a strong preference for the views and opinions of more attractive employees, or alternatively, stated a strong aversion to the views and opinions of less attractive employees. It's just humorous to me because it's so blatantly discriminatory, and they're not making any attempt to hide their aversion, the distaste for less attractive people, even though they're just the same working employees in your organization. They contribute just as much as the more attractive employees, but just because of the way you look, there is this double think regarding what is an acceptable way of treating your workers, which is completely unfair. Personally, I think this is one of the reasons why I think the work from home paradigm shift, you know, the shift we've seen as a result of the COVID pandemic, where everyone has to work from home basically through video chats and Zoom calls and whatnot, in terms of a purely maximizing profits and maximizing productivity point of view, it might actually just be better because this way you're not interacting with different employees. The effect of your look, the effect of your height, the effect of your body shape, these factors are not as important as they are if you're in person at an office setting and there's so much social politics that goes on because of, again, the way you look, your personality, your narcissism. So in communicating by chat logs and post-it notes and messages on, I don't know, Microsoft Teams or something, or on Trello, then in this way, the workplace is becoming a lot more equitable, and I think that's a very positive change, even though it will come at the cost of, I guess, socializing at work, or maybe even your mental health because you're not able to see people as often as you'd like. But really, personally, I don't think your work friends should be really your friends, if that makes sense. You should have friends outside of work because your loyalty in a competitive setting can only go so far. By being able to communicate in a format that doesn't require your face and your body to be there in person, I think this makes for a greater chance for the less attractive members of your workplace or your organization to actually voice their concerns and have it be taken equally, because we're not working with any faces here. I actually say this from experience because at Curves, because of the COVID pandemic in Australia, a lot of us have had to shut down our offices and work from home, which does slow things down a bit in terms of productivity because you have to wait for replies and whatnot from, you know, online messages. But in that sense, I actually haven't seen what my employees look like in for the last 3 or 4 months. So they might have changed. Maybe somebody they shaved their beard, they lost their hair. Who knows? I don't really care. We all just communicate through Microsoft Teams or Google Workplace or Trello cards. And in this sense, it's actually really good because I take everyone's inputs equally, no matter where they are in the company hierarchy. In fact, the people on the ground floor, the people doing the actual grunt work, are the ones that know the most about the product, the whatever product it is we're selling. Just so you know, we don't just sell Curves aesthetic reports. We also have an AI department that makes a lot of AI tech. So those people know a lot. But normally, when it does come to Zoom calls, I'll just talk to the team leaders or the managers. And those are the people I do make face-to-face contact with. But everybody else, I don't really know what they look like, to be fair. And I don't think that's an important factor because work is not really for socializing. And I think you should have friends that are outside of work, people that you've known for years, maybe 10 plus years, your childhood friends, and those are the people you should get your socializing, your communication, your face-to-face contact with, because those people have less at stake in their communication with you. And what I mean by this is when you're communicating with a work friend, the subtext is different when you're communicating with your best friend from childhood. You can say anything you want to your best friend from childhood, but you say something to your work friend, then you have to think, will this person use this against me later on? And maybe they won't, maybe they will, but if it's a professional setting, these are office politics that you need to be aware of. From the results, there was also another interesting effect. there was no main effect for the differences in race. What this means is that unattractive Black, Caucasian, Asian men and women were treated very similarly compared to attractive Black, Caucasian, Asian men and women. What this means, to me at least, is that lookism or looks-based discrimination is actually more prevalent than racism, which does make sense because racism is a lot more strictly regulated. There's a lot of legislation and statutes on it. There's a lot of awareness on what racism is or what counts as discriminatory racist practice, but people are more unaware of how their own biological imperatives actually affects the decision making. So this is the whole point of the Couve's brand, to make you aware of how looks actually play a role in your decision making. And one of the ways is, as we can see, if you're less attractive, your voice is not going to be as well heard. Will there be looks-based legislation? Can you even sue for being discriminated against for being less attractive? In the future, maybe. There are some common law precedents that can allow for you to sue for discrimination, but you'd have to tie that in with some other type of discrimination that's more well established, like sexism or racism. And so in a sense, there isn't much to protect you from saying one person is being discriminated for being less attractive, because how can you define attraction? It's difficult, and most people don't want to even admit that there is a scale to attractiveness, unlike racism or sexism, which are more binary. There's men and women, there's Black, Asian, Caucasian, there's different racial groups. And so that is a lot easier to prove in a court of law than to say this man is discriminating against me because I'm less attractive than my co-workers. And I'm not the only person that thinks this. The researchers have actually put a name to it on the social desirability effect from Fisher 1993 and Nerdorf 1985, where they say that this refers to the general tendency for respondents to mask their true attitudes and proactively conceal unsavory biases that may out them as discriminatory. In this instance, the managers who responded to the survey may have thought that they were completing the items that the researchers were studying for race or gender or some other type of discrimination, and thus adjusted their ratings accordingly by overemphasizing the extent to which they would listen to non-white and female employees and by underemphasizing the extent to which they would listen to white and male employees. I should clarify at this point that what they mean by this is there was a slight effect where the managers, the respondents, gave the female women of color stimuli slightly higher ratings of whether they would listen to them or not compared to straight white men, right? So basically it's a bit of virtue signaling on the respondents' part, and we all do this, we're all guilty of this because it is a social bias. So from the results, what they're really saying is that it may seem that women of color are more heard of in the workplace, so their voices are heard, their concerns are taken seriously than other people, just purely from the results. But in reality, and I'm sure a lot of women of color that may listen to this can attest, the reality is not the same, because the respondents, and much like all of us, we're hiding our true biases, and for that reason we need to be aware of them and actually tackle them from the root. One thing that is very clear from the results, however, is that there is significant voice discrimination against less attractive employees that is likely to generalize reasonably well, and that's because the participants, the people who actually responded to this survey, didn't know that they were being assessed on the attractiveness of the stimuli. In other words, the results that they gave for discriminating against less attractive employees are very much their true feelings, because they didn't know that they were even being tested for it. Whereas with racism or sexism, these are very common, well-known terms, and so respondents are much more careful in concealing their true biases. So what are the actual implications of this finding? Well, firstly, it would be ridiculous to tell men and women to make themselves appear more attractive to make use of this benefit, as it would be to tell a Black man to come to work dressed as a white man in order to get more privileges, you know, in the workplace, or to tell a woman to come dressed as a man and have her voice be better heard. So really, the fault lies in the employer and not the employee. By being aware of your own biases, much like I'm aware of my own biases as a employer and a manager technically of the entire Couve's company, then really I'm better equipped to understand why I make the decisions I do, especially when it concerns employees and people. Like say for instance, two people come to me and ask for a raise or maybe an advance on their pay, and one's more attractive, one's less attractive, then realistically, the only way I can justify my decision is by looking at the merit of their work. And that is something that's quantifiable, that is something that can be accountable. Whereas with a lot of other companies, and even I've worked at this, like when I was working at KFC, when I was a very young, that was like one of my first jobs, the manager would just say something and it just becomes law because the manager said so. That's your boss, you have to listen to them. There's no accountability, there is no quantifiable metric. And so the bias is very much implicit there because the manager is human. And so what her decision is also affects me. And for that reason, I can't challenge it because the manager's word is law. I don't want to be that type of person. So every decision I make is very analytical. It's written down, it's thought of. And if anybody wants to question me on it, I have documentation to show why a decision was made. And I do recommend that you consider that style of management if you are a manager at some kind of workplace. But from experience, what I do find is your employees will respect you as a fair and equitable leader. And as a result, you don't play office favorites and open yourself up to allegations or office politics.